The following program is rated M16+. Parental guidance recommended. It contains strong theme topics, drug use, alcohol use, violence and self-harm.
Welcome to Bounce Back. My name's Yvonne Fletcher from NY Vents and you're listening in to DRN1. Bounce Back's a fun talkback show where I get to interview some comedians. Today, I don't have a comedian with me. I've got the former head of security for the Comedy Lounge and then he moved into the quarantine situation for COVID-19. I've got Nick Kinsella with me. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Yvonne. Thank you for having me.
It's great to see you. I know we've had a lot of chats over the last couple of years during lockdowns and everything. It's really good to have you in this room today. So
it's nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
Definitely. Nick, what made you want to get into security? We'll start there.
Oh, gee, I was 18 years old. I saw a bunch of guys that were kicking around, having a great time being at work, and I thought it was money for going out to a party.
Was it that?
No, it was in the start. We got to work a lot of cool concerts and stuff you wouldn't normally get to go to, and it just turned into something I enjoyed doing and something I grew a passion for. And, you know, years down the line, I became a security consultant and, you know, prospects of starting your own business and all the wonderful things we get to do in Perth and getting to see everything we have to offer here. And I think it's a wonderful city to be a part of that industry and, you know, going along, getting to see different things.
Yeah, definitely. I guess that's one really good way of looking at it is that you actually get access to shows and backstage and stuff like that where other people wouldn't get.
The backstage is definitely where you want to be. Yeah.
Tell me about comedy. How long did you work in that?
I was with the Comedy Lounge. I think it was for nearly 2 years. So about a week after they opened, we got a phone call saying that they wanted security there. And I walked in and I met John McAllister. And, ever since there, it was like a big happy family. They were absolutely lovely. Johnny, Jane, the crew there, they were absolutely tremendous to work with.
Yeah, it's such a fantastic venue as well, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. No, honestly, that place was we used to make the joke there. It's the retirement job you want.
And you're way too young to retire, so.
Yeah, unfortunately. Honestly, I would have stayed there and worked for free for years and years and years. I still keep in touch with Johnny and Jane. Just such wonderful people to work with.
Yeah, I can imagine. They have done such a great job with the whole, their vision and seeing it come to life. It's a fun place to go to. And I think they were game changers really in the comedy scene for Perth.
Yeah, and look, and the way they run things, I mean, like John has such big ideas and, you know, he'll sit there and talk about them with you in his small little office out the back of the club there. And, you know, you'll sit there and you think, John, you're nuts. But he just has this way of, you know, making things work. And it would be nice to see more venue owners and more people in the hospitality industry have a way of actually achieving what they want the way he does.
Yeah. Do you think his passion is his driving force for it?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
There's just something about that man. It's borderline majestic and insane.
I love that. When you're a security person, but how do you manage, I guess you've got a big responsibility. You've got to look after audience. You've got to look after artists. You've got to look after venue. How do you juggle it all?
Prior to that, I worked in a lot of rough venues and things like that. And when I got there, I was wondering, oh God, where's all your fall down drunks? Where are all these? Where are the people doing drugs in the bathroom? Where have they all gone? I didn't know what to do with myself. And, you know, and after a chat with Johnny, I said, you don't need security. You do not need to be paying for people to come and secure your venue when it's so nice.
Yeah.
And it was. And like 9 times out of 10, like pretty much my job was just to welcome people in the front door.
Yeah.
And basically I get to watch a show for free.
Oh, that's really good.
You know, 2-3 nights a week.
Yeah. So when you're saying you're welcoming people in the door, it's always, it is very well done there. So did you have a bit of banter as well with people?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, we had if anyone's listening and they haven't been there, there's a big sign there that I've been telling Johnny I'm going to steal. it's got three things on it. It's got no mobiles, no dickheads, and laughter only. And it's got a big cross through the first two and a big tick on the third one. And we'd sit there and on the busy nights through Fringe, as you know, Fringe is insane in Perth.
Mm.
And we'd have lines all the way down Murray Street to get in. And it's only a small venue. And we'd sit there and we'd just run through people in the alley. All right, who's been here before? And then you get a few call out, go, yeah, we have. Who knows the three rules at the front door? A few people would put their hands up. And you get a few more. They go, oh, yeah, yeah. All right, what are they? No mobiles, no dickheads, laughter only. All right, you guys have been here before. Follow on through.
Fantastic. So you kind of give them priority.
Yeah.
Which makes them feel a bit special as well.
Yeah. And look, it's a bit of fun and games as well. And on special events and holidays, I'd dress up, you know, as a leprechaun for St. Paddy's Day. I'd dress up as Santa for Christmas, you know, sequin suits and all the nonsense. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever thought about doing comedy yourself?
Oh, not sober. I think there was one night there, Brendan, who was the booking manager at the time, I think it was one of those nights off. I popped in to say hello and we had a few sherbets out the back and he turned around and said, oh, why don't you get up there? And I did, and I bombed terribly.
Oh, but at least you got up. Well done.
Yeah. No. Well, honestly, it was brilliant. Look, kudos to anyone that has the guts to get up there. It's a tough gig, and, you know, and it's lovely with what Johnny's doing now as well with the comedian classes and showing them how to stand up for the first 5 minutes. That stuff doesn't get done here.
I've
never seen it done here in Perth, and I think it's marvellous that he does do it, and, you know, and hopefully some good comes out of it. I think there's been quite a few that have made a little name for themselves, and I think they've done really, really well.
Yeah, I think we've got a great comedy scene here in Perth. It's a lot of fun. Who are your favourite comics to work with?
Oh, well, they're all local, the ones I like. there's actually quite a few stories about a few of the ones that we got on pretty well with. John Pinder, hands down, would be, yeah, he'd be instantly my favourite. Just such an intelligent and interesting man to talk to put on.
He is just so nice as well, isn't he?
Yeah, there's just something about him you can't quite put your finger on. But no, anything to do with him, if you ever get the chance to have a conversation with him, I always found it was very eye-opening and rather spiritual. And
yeah, I agree with you. He's a very deep thinker.
Yeah.
And he shifts you. And he always, whenever I have conversations with him, he will just, I don't know, he's thought-provoking. And I always message him, go, you said something and I walked away from you and I went, okay, yep, I've really had to think deeply about this and this is where I'd have gone with it. And I love that about him.
Yeah, no, 100%. And for sheer insanity on stage, I think Andrew Wolf is definitely up there as well.
Energy, right?
If that's what you call it, yeah. No, I wouldn't speak bad about Wolfie. I've had some great times with him. Yeah. I remember one Christmas we had a little bit of a party and we're sitting there wandering around the back streets of, I think it was Greenwood.
Yeah.
Sitting there trying to find his little remote control drone. I think Johnny and Jane got him for Christmas and going around knocking on people's doors.
Well, had he crashed it?
It went up and then it disappeared. And we're sitting there knocking on people's doors at like 7 o'clock at night, drunk as 10 men each. And yeah.
Did you find it? That's the thing.
No.
Oh, no.
There was no hope of that. No hope whatsoever.
So if anyone in Greenwood area found, what year are we talking? Two years, 3 years ago?
Three, maybe.
Okay. Found a drone and you still have that. Please return it to Andrew Wolf.
No, it's a Christmas present. By all means, take it. It was no good to him sober. It'll be no good to him drunk. But no, he was absolutely lovely. He's such a funny man as well in his own right. And yeah, now to see people on stage with some of the things that comes out of his mouth, it's utterly hilarious.
Yeah. What did you used to do with, if you did get any unruly audience members, how did you used to manage that? Because talking or...
Well, it's not really the place you want to go and sit there and chicken wing somebody and drag them down five flights of stairs.
No.
That staircase, I've done more damage to myself walking down by myself. It's not the kind of place where that would be the case. You basically just go up and ask them, like, and you can usually tell the crowd does 90% of the work for you.
Mm.
It's like going to the movies and being that Muppet that has a... has his phone on loud and, you know, everyone turns around, they all sort of eye you off, and if you don't get the message then me coming and having a conversation with you isn't really going to do too much, but it might push the envelope and you might make your own way out. 9 times out of 10, there was nothing anyway.
Yeah.
I think there was one time where we had to physically evict somebody and that was me, the chef and Johnny all together. But no, it wasn't that kind of place generally. It was more of a, you know, fast and loose kind of, you know.
Yeah.
As long as you're well behaved, nobody seemed to mind.
That sounded like a bit of a joke in the making as well, you joining the chef. So.
Yeah. Well, there was a few instances like that. But, yeah, we won't go any further. Behind closed doors in the green room, Steve. Behind closed doors in the green room.
who's I guess, you know, you've got John Pinder and you've got Andrew Wolf as favourites. Is there anyone international that you enjoyed working with as well?
Takashi Wakasugi or Waka, he was always such a barrel of laughs when he came. And another local act as well would be Simone Springer. She was always just a joy to, you know, welcome into the club as well. You know, even having Steve Hughes as well, he was good value. I know he resides mainly in the UK or floats between there and Melbourne now. But he was always good fun to be around as well. And
yeah. Yeah, and Simone's beautiful. She's such a joy as well. Oh, I love talking to her.
Lovely
yeah.
girl.
Yeah. Yeah, or everyone that I love that you're mentioning. Waka is great, right?
Yeah.
Just yeah, wholesome.
He's got to keep that Japanese whiskey away from me, though.
That's not bad, that stuff.
Oh, it's too nice. It's like lolly water.
Yeah, I had a really nice plum one. That was, yeah, anyway, going off track here, but that's okay to do.
you can tell that lockdown's been good for us. Just a pair of alcoholics having a conversation.
Lockdown's what made me start drinking again.
Yes, blame the lockdown.
I'm serious. Like, it's so bad. I was, you know, not really much of a drinker. And then all of a sudden I was like, oh, I've got to do something with my time.
I think everybody did. I think, do you remember the BWS and all that they all put together that you can only buy one carton a day?
Yeah.
It's like, a carton a day, I'd be.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Like, how much are you going to drink in a day?
I couldn't do that. I'm like still a Cadbury kid, so, you know, like my glass and a half is still tipsy time for me.
Yeah, we'll have to go out drinking after this.
It'll be messy, Nick.
Yeah. Awesome. I promise I won't throw you out. I'm not working.
Oh, my gosh. In my younger years, I should have been thrown out of so many places. I never did. I fell asleep in places.
Oh, that's all right. I'm no better. I used to go out and, you know, being that sort of person, like, I'd run quite a few clubs before I got the Comedy Lounge. So, like, having a few people know who you are and things like that, and knowing all the different venue owners and things like that, it was, you know, oh, Nick, come in and have a drink. I'd walk up James Street in Northbridge. I'd be drunk by halfway through it. You know, there's no such thing as one.
It's one at every stop, right?
Oh, yeah, and you can be as drunk as 10 men and nobody will throw you out. It's like, oh, that's just Nick.
I remember in my younger years, like, falling asleep in clubs because I did know the bouncers and stuff. They'd be like, Yvonne, wake up. If you don't wake up now, we're going to have to kick you out. Like, okay, I'm awake. I'll just start dancing again. This is like 4 o'clock in the morning, but, you know, I'm 18 and just, yeah.
At least you can dance.
Yeah, that's an assumption, okay?
Well, at least you can try.
I just, yeah, dance like nobody's watching, okay?
Yeah, well, I'd prefer if nobody was for me.
I think as long as you're having fun, you know, you're not causing too much trouble.
Yeah. And the Comedy Lounge was good for that too, on their little Friday night karaoke spiels and stuff like that. Oh, God. They just got to change the Sweet Caroline thing. That's been flogged like a dead horse.
I think they're still doing that.
Oh, no. Johnny, change it.
But it's fun, right?
Oh, it is. It's good fun. I used to love seeing him get up there and he'd go and pull me up and he goes, oh, Nick, come on. We got to start off with karaoke. Oh, well, what are we singing, John? Oh, we'll do Sweet Caroline. Sweet Caroline will do. I used to think that was the only song Johnny knew, but no, I was very wrong about that.
You know, one of the things I like about audiences in comedy, and I can't say this is the same for every single audience, and you might be able to correct me here or put me on the straight. Basically, I love when people walk in, you never know how they're feeling about stuff, and when they walk out, they're on a high. Comedy just makes people laugh. It gives them good feels and, yeah.
I think it's one of those venues as well, and it doesn't matter where you go in Perth that has a comedy outlet. I think the best part about a place like that is you could have the worst week in the world and you can go into a place like that and for whether it's 5 minutes, 5 seconds, doesn't matter how long the joke runs for, there's always one joke that will stick with somebody. And if you get to watch people come out of the club, they'll be laughing about that one joke. Doesn't matter how far or how long ago it was told, they'll still remember that one joke. And it will make them forget how bad their day, their week or their month was. And I think that's beautiful as well. I think that's why comedy is such a good, robust art form where it can sort of tap into people's feelings and make them feel better about themselves.
Yeah, I love that. One of the things I've seen across the scene at the moment is people are very apprehensive about booking tickets. And I think we all need things to look forward to. So people need to get out there, book tickets and look forward to seeing something. And comedy, definitely book, because it's worth it. You walk out on a high, basically.
100%. If you're not doing anything this weekend or whatever weekend thereafter, go up, grab a ticket. Doesn't matter where you go. Doesn't matter who you see, but I highly recommend the Comedy Lounge. I'm not being biased. Yeah, Johnny, you're going to have to pay me about 10% for these. I reckon it's something everybody should go and experience, and, you know, especially during Fringe, book your tickets, because chances are you're not getting in.
Yeah, definitely. I think as well, Fringe is one of those things in Perth. It just creates such a good buzz and vibe throughout the whole city. And if you haven't experienced Fringe before, it's a chance and opportunity to see something you wouldn't normally see. So I think, or if you do love it, you're going to get it on a bargain price. So just, yeah, get out there and pre-book.
Honestly, there is so much entertainment during Fringe out and about there. Like, it doesn't matter where you go. You can go to Northbridge, you can go to Perth. Even the business district gets into it. And look, if you want to see quality acts for not a lot of money, Fringe is the best place to do it. You might pay a third of what you would normally for a single club ticket generally. And you know what, you can go and line up and you can do three shows a night. You can go see three different sorts of acts. You can go see, you know, magic shows, comedy shows, you know, any
burlesque.
I wasn't going to go there. But no, yeah, you can go and see all of those things, and, you know, and it won't cost you a great deal of money. And, and you know what, you'll end up with having the best weekend ever, and it doesn't cost you a lot.
Definitely.
You can go and enjoy yourself.
Even circus. I love seeing the circus shows during Fringe. They're fantastic.
Oh, they're awesome. Oh God, what was her name? Jane used to do a few. She used to do all the sword swallowing and stuff like that.
Yes.
Yeah. She was awesome. Like that. Oh, I have got no idea where you go to school for that sort of stuff.
I can't watch that stuff. I'm okay with the – no, I'm not. I'm not. I was going to say I'm okay. I'm not. I have to look away. And anything that when people put the push up stuff up their nose, yuck. Yeah. I'm always like, no, can't watch this. It's just freaky.
I still think it's awesome, like, and, you know, all the little, like, fire battens and stuff like that. That stuff is so cool.
It is really cool. And I admire it. I'm not saying I don't. I don't know. It freaks me out. Like, that's a real out there talent to have. It's a skill. Guess the crap out of me.
Yeah, no, I can't say I'd like to do it myself. I might do it wrong and give myself a lobotomy or something. But no, but I think anyone that can do that, I mean, it's just, and if you do get to see it live, it's one of those things. It will leave you on the edge of your seat for sure.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah, definitely. Besides comedy, what sort of security have you done?
So I've done quite a lot of personal protection work. So that's, you know, general bodyguard work. Go get your client, go and walk them from A to B and make sure nobody bothers them and all that sort of stuff. And then there's lots of pubs and clubs, security consulting. And right now I'm sort of moving more into the investigation side of things.
Yeah.
So cheating spouses and all the lovely stuff nobody likes to talk about.
When you do personal bodyguard sort of stuff, is that usually, I'm assuming, someone rich or famous or something like that? How do you manage that, like, as well?
Well, it's all about working out what the risks are to your client. So if they're a high-profile person, so take Taylor Swift, for example. So, for instance, you've got to work out their fan base. You've got to work out what they like and don't like, work out what areas to avoid, work out where the highest risk would come from. So if they're out in a general area, say if they go out to a club in Northbridge, there's a lot of people and they're pretty recognisable, you've got to take those things into account.
Yeah. Do you find in those sort of situations venues are very good at working with you to protect these people as well?
Yeah, they can be. Also, I prefer not to tell anybody that they're going. Keep it under wraps, you know. Sort of like you would have seen with Jim Jefferies when he came to Perth at the Comedy Lounge, back to that.
Yeah.
We had lines all the way down Murray Street just because everybody saw a Twitter post.
It was a quick post, wasn't it? Yeah. It was like a flash post.
5 minutes it was up or something like that. And because he had a show in town, I think it was at Perth Arena.
Yes.
And, yeah, we had about 3,000 people lined up down the doors. And people were banging to get in. That's why we ended up changing that big lock on there so we could keep it shut. Once we had our, I think it was 180 people, we shut the doors. And, you know, we fit as many as we legally could in. And, you know, that was just insane. I had to get another guy in because I normally work that club by myself. And we had to get another set of arms and legs to help me out. And Yeah, no, it was absolutely insane, and people bashing down the door to go and see him. That's why I'd prefer, if you're doing personal protection, don't tell everybody where you're going. It's
yeah,
even if it's for 5 minutes. But no, that was an interesting night though.
Definitely. Yeah, what happened that night then, besides managing 3,000 people?
3,000's not a great deal,
I guess. For one person.
Yeah. But no, honestly, that night was pretty intense due to the fact that, you know, we had people showing up to, I think it was a gong show. And, you know, the gong shows, you know, normally packs out well enough, but this 5 minute flash post gave us, you know, an absorbing amount of work to do in such a short period of time. And we thought, oh yeah, no, we're definitely going to need a few more bodies here. And so it was me, Johnny, the chef, and another guy that we had hired for the night. and just to manage that, so we were, you know, we had one guy locking up the green room. So, you know, typically I would stand next to the green room and all that and pop in, check on the acts, and, you know, if it was a decent night, I'd be feeding them beers. But yeah, it could be one of those things where Jim came in and he went in, sat down in the back, and he just had his little bottle to himself, and that was what he did. And he just chilled out until it was time for him to jump up on stage, which was whenever he wanted.
Yep.
And Johnny's really good for catering to bigger acts and stuff like that when it comes down to that sort of thing. And sadly, it's you know, something we don't get to see enough of in Perth.
Yeah, definitely. It would be great to see more. I guess our borders need to be open for that first.
Yeah, let's just get her over with, eh?
Sorry, I'm sitting on the fence with that actually, Nick, because in my way, we've had such a good lifestyle here, and I'm apprehensive, and I guess you've got more scope of stuff than what I do because you've worked in security and quarantine. I guess I'm apprehensive because I'm not keen on, you know, just letting this virus come through and smashing out our events more than what it already has. So I guess that's where I'm a bit scared of it all.
100%. I think everybody's apprehensive as to what they actually want. I mean, I think this weekend is meant to be this big 50,000 person rally at the Supreme Court Gardens, and, you know, and everyone just wants to sort of get it over with. And but in saying that as well, like, I understand where that's coming from. Everyone just wants to go back to normal life. And at the same time, it's how many more lockdowns do you want to do? How many more cancelled events? And, you know, to be honest, I think 2 years, it's either worked or it hasn't.
Yeah. I think that's the thing. I do appreciate what you're saying there as well. The people want to go back to what it was, but we're in a pandemic still. Mm. And until it becomes downgraded to an epidemic, which we're not even close to being an epidemic, it's not going to. I have to, I guess, grieve what we used to have, because we had a great life, all of us, worldwide, I mean. And then we've had this pandemic, which I guess none of us were really mentally prepared for.
No, I don't think anybody is. And that's the one thing, and you just sort of hit the nail on the head there. The mental health aspect of what it's done is remarkable. I mean, what, 2 years ago, if you heard this was coming, would you have believed it?
No. I mean, I watched a lot of scary movies, but no. I used to joke to my children and say, you know, if we have a World War III, you guys are stuffed, because all you do is sit and play games all the time. And then this coronavirus hit, and I was like, I was wrong and you were right. I'm going to die and you're going to live because you play games.
Yeah. Look, I remember those. I remember when they told all the doormen and all the bodyguards that they were out of work to start with, you know, when it all came through. And, you know, I'm sitting there going, oh, no, not my poor comedy club. And, you know, and I'm sitting there going, okay, who's out of work? Who's still got a job? And all my friends all got together, and all the mates of mine that did nothing through high school and all they did was go to work at Coles and Woolies and smoke pot on the back dock, on the loading docks and stuff. They're all fine. They're yeah. Cool. All my mates with, you know, university degrees and stuff like that, they're all out of work.
Yeah.
And yeah, my mate sitting there ripping a bong out the back he's fine.
It's hard, isn't it? Because I guess, I don't know, we never knew what was going to happen. I always thought in the arts realm, I remember having a conversation with an artist saying, he was saying to me, you know, he felt that, you know, there was longevity in art because of the mental health component. This was pre-COVID. And then COVID hits and it wipes the art industry out. It wipes, yeah. You know, venues out. And all of a sudden we're like, whoa, okay, how do we do this? And then we're like, okay, do we go online to produce shows? And I hate that. It's like watching TV to me. It's nothing like going to a real live performance and having that crowd involvement and everything else. So
yeah, no, and 100%. But I also do think it's one of those things where it sort of blossomed the creativity as well that a lot of these people do have. And like, you know, any comedian you can say is 100% creative, but I thought it was amazing how many of them banded together and actually tried to make something work through the digital media we all have access to. And it's something that you wouldn't have generally thought of and until this happened. And to be honest, I think it's amazing that we can actually sort of get people out there. And, you know, all the guys that did practice comedy and it is their passion, I'm very surprised at how they've managed to all put something together, and they've worked it all out in such a way that, you know, people can see them tell their jokes and still get a laugh out of it, and, you know, still have that, you know, it might not be the same effect as what we were saying before about, you know, when you have a bad day at work and you go see a show, but still it's enough of something to make people laugh.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess it gives everyone an outlet still, doesn't it? And
yeah.
Tell me more. Well, let's change subject here a little bit. Quarantine. You were head of security there?
Yep. So I was involved with 7 of 9 venues, whether that be the setup, daily operation, or policy and procedure implementation or creation.
Yeah. How did, because again, this is a new job that's been created out of a virus.
Yeah.
How did you find tackling that? Because that obviously you had security risks with people breaching or people coming in and out of quarantine. It's mind-boggling what you had to go through.
All right, so this is coming from someone with a year 9 education and doesn't know a great deal about a lot of things. You ever walk into a place and you go, you know, like a new job, for instance, and you know, you heard about it and you didn't quite know about it, but you went in there thinking, oh, yeah, I've got some skill for that. And then we're walking and go, what the am I doing?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was like that for all of us. We all sort of walked into that kind of thinking, oh, yeah, you know, heaps of doorman bouncer types, as you call them. And all of us sort of sitting there going, okay, do we just grab and throw people? Do we, you know, what do we do? And it's just we had to sort of look at it and change our mindset of how we actually do things and how do we keep people locked in rooms. It sounds insane. And when we did get in there, we're like, okay, cool, where's all our PPE? We've got to, you know, actually use gloves and masks. And those were the days where we didn't have any because everybody went and bought them off all the shelves.
Wow, so as a job, you weren't provided with protective gear?
No, nobody had it. There was nowhere to get it.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So you guys were probably one of the most at-risk industry without PPE?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. No, and look, and to be honest, we didn't. You know, we were given little bags that had, you know, two masks or two pairs of gloves or something like that, and you know, but we didn't have to wear them at the start of it. So, you know, during the first part, arrivals and departures, yeah, we would, but you know, it's one of those things of not knowing who's who as well. You might get someone go out to the hospital because they might need, you know, an appointment for whatever ails them. And they come back and you don't quite know that they've been dropped off in a private car and they come and knock on the door to get in. You've got to unbolt the door, let them in, and oh my God, that's that person and I'm not wearing anything.
Wow.
Yeah, so close contacts are kind of fun.
Yeah, wow. Would, how do you feel the mental health, because I've always struggled with the idea of being locked down for 14 days. I would just couldn't do it. I know that. How do you think people coped with it in there?
You can usually tell when someone's got something wrong within 72 hours.
Okay.
Yeah. As sick as that sounds, 72 hours is usually your dead giveaway point. And usually those people who are scared of being isolated, they all do the same thing when they get off a bus.
Yeah.
And you can spot it a million miles away. They'll get off. It doesn't matter how many people are in front, how many people are behind. They usually look up. They do a big roar in, they do a big breath in, and then they do a big breath out, and they look down at their feet for the rest of the time. And the reason you can tell they draw a breath in is because the mask basically goes down their throat.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so you can usually tell the anxiety starts to kick in there of, oh, my God, that's my prison.
Yeah, okay, so they're kind of looking up at the building, not at the sky necessarily.
Yeah. No. People always tend to look up, and those are the ones that you usually sort of monitor and you get their room number and you just sort of pay a bit closer attention to those ones.
I had a lot of assumptions during, you know, this whole quarantine phase, and be it wrong, be it right. One of the things I did think was hotel quarantine was not necessarily the best idea. I kind of like the idea of rottenness. I don't know how you feel about that. The reason being, I think open air, fresh air is much better healthy-wise, mentally health for people, but also viruses as well. It's, you know, when you put someone in an air-conditioned environment, as we've always known with flus and colds and stuff, it's a great spread fest. So, yeah, what's your thoughts?
Oh, look, to be honest, I would love to be quarantining on an icicle island somewhere. I think that would be wonderful. And to be honest, I didn't see the problem with the idea, but the issue was access to healthcare. So,
okay.
You know, you've got people that are coming over with underlying conditions. You know, you might have someone with stage 3, you know, lung cancer or something like that, and they need to be near a hospital. They need to, you know, have access to those facilities. And, you know, I get the argument for it as well. But, no, if it was on an island, I would have much appreciated working on the islands and stuff like that, because I wouldn't have to sit there and write down Uber Eats orders.
So is that how you – so people couldn't do their own Uber Eats? You guys had to manage that too?
Oh, well, what would happen is people would order them from, you know, from the phones, and they'd put in the address for the hotel, and then it has to go through screening. So what we have to do is we have to sit there and search it in some cases, and – you know, people would drop off care packages, you know, with clothes and all that sort of thing. And, you know, we'd sit there and, you know, Coles and Woolworths deliveries, people would order, you know, all their fruits and all their veggies, and they order a massive knife, you know, just from the kitchen section. And they'd be like, yeah, no sharp pointy thing. That is all yours. You can have the stabby back. Thank you. And, yeah, so, you know, just anything that's going to end up in your body that doesn't really look like it belongs there, that's something you can take and you can go home with. Thank you. But, yeah, no, I do see the point of having Rottnest Island on the cards again, but at the same time, it's just not there for all the just for all the other requirements that they do have.
I do like, well, yeah, it's something that I had never considered. Say if someone has you know, like say let's say lung cancer, like you said, I guess managing them and treating them as an individual rather than, I mean, that maybe those people had to be treated or have to be treated differently to say your general people that don't have any medical issues that we know of, and then yeah, maybe you have to do a separation there.
Yeah, and like a lot of the time, I mean, this is just my view as well. I'm not saying that everybody thinks the same as me, but I spent 18 months in some capacity or another dealing with the whole hotel quarantine program that we ran in WA, and I think the thing that I saw the most is within 3 days you generally work out when something's wrong with someone. You know, you'll get the ones that will go, oh, I need to speak to somebody. So we put them on the phone to telehealth or somewhere like that. And what they'll do is they'll sit there and they'll talk as much as they need to. And in the case of we had one lady on Boxing Day last year. It made the news, so I guess I can talk about it. Jenny Dubois, or we named her Dubious Jenny. She was the one who walked out of the hotel.
Oh.
Yeah.
How did she do that?
She has 2 feet and a heartbeat. No, we knew she was going, and we got her phone call saying, oh yeah, this is what she's planning. She was very active on social media about it as well, saying if anyone has a car and wants to come and pick her up. And I think she ended up getting on a bus or something like that. I'd seen her on the night shift beforehand, and she rolled in and she goes, I'm leaving tomorrow. I'm like, oh cool, good for you, just get back in your room.
So she was always trying to come in and out, and
yeah, so she was looking out constantly for various reasons. And yeah, she turned around one day and she says, oh no, I'm leaving. Okay, righto. You know, feeling like a very angry dad, just going, just get back to your bloody room, woman. And yeah, no, so she went back to her room, and then she goes, I'll be leaving between these times. So I had a 3-stage lockdown protocol that I designed for pretty much every hotel I was in. And the basis of that is stage 1, lock down the floor. Shut down the elevators, bar up the fire exit doors. And I'm not saying bar them up permanently. I'm saying just get 2 or 3 big dudes on each end so you can't open the doors. And shut down the elevators. I don't need the key for that. Hotels used to hate it. So, you know, when you throw a chair in there and the doors can't close and it just goes beep, beep, beep. Yeah, they love that. It's so good. It's just a really calming noise. And so,
but I guess it's a quick way of stopping an elevator, isn't it?
Well, when I think of it, when I've got someone trying to escape and it's my job to lock them up, which is completely different to what I'm used to doing. But if I've got someone trying to escape somewhere, it's going to be, I'm going to do this as quick as I can, and I'm not going to wait for your maintenance man
who's,
you know, unblocking a toilet in room 1003 or something. So, yeah, no, my way was just throw a chair in, throw whatever you can, and as long as it doesn't get crushed by the doors, it's fine.
Mm.
Yeah, so I initiated that protocol when we heard she was leaving, and I kept it on all night, so no one had access to elevators or anything like that unless we reinstate them for other reasons, like you need to go and use a bathroom, which is usually up on the top floor for us. So we did that, and we waited, and then handed her off to the next guy who was coming in to do his shift, and then he was told by a certain group of people that, you can't do that. That's deprivation of liberty. If they cut themselves, injure themselves trying to get out, you'll be had up for that. And, you know, it was more or less a fear tactic from a couple of officers who came in to tell us that. And that's when she walked out. So if we had kept things the way I'd placed them, they would have worked out that way. You know, she would have stayed in. She just would have wandered up and down the corridor like a lost loony bin woman. And, you know, and that's the way it would have gone. I think she's in, where is it now? Bandy Up?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think she's still doing time there.
Is that because she broke protocol?
Yeah, well, that's because, she escaped quarantine.
Wow, okay.
I think she's still there, unless they've let her go and haven't really kept up with her.
Yeah.
It's not like we were pen pals or anything.
No. What was one of the most funniest things that happened in there?
Oh, God. funniest as in what we did, or?
Yeah, or ironic, I don't know, or even.
Oh, there's a lot.
Customer-wise.
Customer-wise, oh, God. Well, we had quite a few funny instances. I worked for quite a long time with a mate of mine, Cordell. He was he and I used to bounce off each other like children. We'd sit there and we'd play the Law and Order theme song when we jumped out of elevators to go and see the staff and stuff like that. You know, it was just our little joke that we'd have with them. But we used to have to do something called Code Black training. Code Black is a full scale breach, and we had one guy jump on the radio and I said, "Mate, where are you?" And he goes, "Oh, I'm busy." I said, "Well, mate, we're doing code black training." He goes, "Well, too bad. I'm doing a code brown." Never bring your radio to the toilet.
But if he didn't answer, you'd probably be worried, right?
Oh, I think I'd be less worried if I didn't know. there was a few different things as well. Like, you know, we had, the one particular person walk out of a room and we nicknamed him the Drunken T-Rex. Because, the audio to that video, if anyone who's got it, you see a very, very fit man walk out and he throws his arms up and down, and, you know, the audio to that is pretty much just him going, and so we nicknamed him the Drunken Hungry T-Rex. Seeing him sort of come out and, you know, jump into an elevator with somebody that they shouldn't be jumping in with, that was hilarious.
How did you manage people that just were not compliant?
Very easy, actually. We just call the cops.
Yeah, okay.
So, but the only problem with that is they take 20 minutes to roll up.
Yeah. Well, okay. And I guess there were some people that, you know, like myself, I wouldn't have coped in 14 days quarantine. That would have been very hard in a room with no windows and whatever else. But I guess, you know, then if they're getting intoxicated as well, that's tricky, right?
Well, yeah. You were allowed to order 6 beers with lunch and 6 beers with dinner, or a bottle of wine. I'm not sure. I'm not a wine drinker. I don't know how messy that gets you. I'm more of a beer and bourbon guy. Anybody who's listening to this that knows me sort of would understand. But 6 beers with lunch, 6 beers with dinner, they were allowed to order, but they could accumulate.
Mm.
You know, you could accumulate a good couple of cartons in a few days if you didn't feel like it and felt like having a good healthy day or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. RSA wasn't really on the cards because you don't know how alcohol affects somebody. You don't know if they're stockpiling, you know, that those sorts of things. So you might get someone that's a two-pot screamer, so to call it.
Yeah, like me.
No, you might get somebody like that though, and they have 2 beers and they're absolutely legless and they're anyone's in a club. But if you lock them up in a hotel, for instance, who knows what they do? They make dumb decisions, some of these people, and unfortunately, it costs them a lot in the pocket.
Yeah.
As well, like the fines were astronomical as well. I think it was $1,000 for sticking your head out. One guy got we had.
Really? So for going into quarantine, you pay for that, and then you're paying for it if you do the wrong thing as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. 100%.
Ouch.
And you have to pay for some of the hotels were making people pay for, what do you call them? Oh, basically for food and any other incidentals that they would have.
Yeah.
So if there was damage to the room, they'd pay for that and all those sorts of things. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's unfortunately that's the system we were given. And, you know, back then it worked. And have you seen the news now, though, with all the quarantine workers getting sick again and all these sorts of things? It's like, I remember when we all had to go in and get the first jab, it was, you know, we were all told, okay, cool, it's February now, we all need to get everybody done. That's, you know, the requirement we have. Okay, no worries. What are we supposed to do? They said, well, Nick, you're the head of security for this team. Yep. And indirectly, you're going to be the, you know, you're going to be your poster boy for it. So you're going to have to tell all your crew to go and get vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you don't have a job. Okay. That's interesting. I don't remember anybody, you know, like the FIFO workers recently saying, oh, no jab, no job, stick it.
Yeah.
We didn't have that. We had the general public going, oh, you need to be vaccinated. Okay. No jab, no job. And we can't work anywhere else at this stage because in December everybody sort of outlawed us working other venues because of some guy who jumped in a taxi and went from, you know, Albany to Joondalup or something. I don't know who travels that much in a day. But, yeah, so what they did there was they mandated it for us back then and, you know, and apparently that's meant to stop you getting it.
Mm.
You know, when, you know, we were talking to doctors at the time saying, you know, we us guys who have been doing it with no gear and stuff like that, we had no protection at the very start saying, oh, you know, well, wouldn't we have developed some sort of immunity to it, you know, due to micro exposure and things like that? You know, we've never been sick.
Mm.
And, you know, that none of that accounted for anything. And
good question, Bart. It's a very good, you know, thing to ask, I think.
Yeah, and that was, you know, I'm not a scientist. I'm not a doctor. But that was the one thing I sort of suggested was, okay, cool. And the amount of guys that came back sick as a dog coming back in, and we were running like a little infirmary in our break rooms, you know, all the guys that were coming back with high temperatures and all that sort of stuff a few minutes after their jab. And, you know, we looked like a World War II infirmary. We had 20 guys all lined up on the you know, couches in the break rooms and, you know, we're sitting there fanning them. We had other guys sitting there trying to pump water down guys' throats. And, you know, even for me, I had the ECG machine brought out by the medical team because I've had open heart surgery. And, you know, I'm pretty worried about things like that.
Yeah, fair enough. I would be too.
yeah. It seems like a reasonable thing to be worried about.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there, my heart's beating a million miles and I can't breathe. Okay, no worries. So they hooked me up to the ECG. Oh, great, you've got pericarditis.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, okay, cool, what do I do with it? And they said,
that's a really rare side effect, isn't it? And is, wow, okay. Yeah.
So I had that twice and I had the same thing happen. We just had the medical staff in the hotel turn around and say, oh, we have an ECG. We can monitor this. Oh, great, can you fix it?
Wow. So what did you have to do for that?
Take a lot of anti-inflammatories.
Okay.
A lot of them.
Yeah, because from my understanding, that is happening more with males, teenage males, isn't it? So, yeah, and it's...
I think it's from, 15 to 30 or something.
Yeah. So you had that. Did they delay your second vaccine then, or did you get an exemption for it?
No. I didn't get exempted from anything. I think now is the only time because of where I am at the moment. It's been mandated for me to get a third one, so I'm on R&R at the moment. So I'm going to be, you know, going through seeing the appropriate people because, to be honest, I like breathing.
Yeah.
I'm not anti-vax. I'm just pro-choice on the whole matter, and I think everyone should, you know, go and see their GP and go and sort out what they need to do.
Oh, definitely, especially you've got a pre-existing health issue and you've had a reaction to it. So, twice. Yeah.
And I also think that, you know, everybody should, pretty much just go and look after themselves. It's one of those things of you can't sit there and go, oh, because my boss told me to. It's, no.
Yeah, definitely. What would be an improvement that you'd like to see in quarantine?
Less people in it.
Okay.
I don't think it's the place for anyone to go to for simply the mental health side of things as well, your physical health if you're that way inclined to self-harm.
Mm.
But, you know, I'd like to see less people in it. And to be honest, I'd like to see the whole system kind of scrapped if you can, you know, go out and work out a safe way for people to go and isolate at home or something like that. You know, that would be a nicer improvement, but logistically it's probably not going to work.
Mm.
But also at the same time of, you know, we're talking about new variants and new bits and pieces. I was still around when Delta came through and Delta was like Freddy Krueger to us.
The scary one, yeah.
Yeah. That was like Freddy Krueger for us. And we thought, oh, no, it's going to get us in our sleep. But no, it to be honest, it didn't really affect anything that we did on the day-to-day. It tightened up a few little screws, but to be honest, the operation was still the same. We were more concerned about people rolling up in the wrong suit jacket.
Yeah. I think media has a lot to answer for in terms of, I mean, there are different variations. We're going to have continuous different variations as much as for long as this is around. Hopefully we just get used to it. But now, you know, the Omicron is, you know, the scary variation. And
In saying that, I wouldn't be too scared of it in saying that, really, because they reckon, what is it, the best news I've heard in a while is, yeah, it's more contagious but less severe on the body.
Yeah.
You know, that to me seems like it's a bit of good news for a change.
Well, I'm curious about that because we really haven't had it here in WA. Like, very few of us have experienced it. So I'm wondering, say Omicron comes through and hits us, will it hit us harder because we've never had it? And is Omicron less with people who have previously had any sort of COVID? And I just don't know the answers to that.
Oh, well, I think that's a good question for our fine people in government who apparently receive a great deal of medical advice.
One of the things I've asked, tried to ask World Health Authority a few times on their socials, when you do case studies, right, you always have a control group. And we were a naturally selected control group here in WA, here in Australia and New Zealand. I think there were some Asian countries that were too. I have always been curious as to why World Health Authority did not recommend that we were COVID-free, remain COVID-free, but also vaccination-free, because that is a real control group then. Mm. To do that, we would have had to stop travelling, internationals. And I think it would have been good to have that because, you know, it's a safeguard basically against anything that bad that could have happened both ways. So
yeah. And like, what do you mean by the control group for vaccination?
So we would have been vaccination free.
Yeah.
I think that in any, when you do scientific studies, right, there's usually people that would have the virus and also gain the vaccinations. And there was people that would receive placebos, which obviously in this situation, no one's receiving placebos. I've heard that gossip. That's absolutely, I do not believe that. But then there's also in a control study, you would have a control group that had nothing. And they are your basis on how you gauge everyone. It also safeguards people. So say inevitably COVID ended up wiping out the whole world, or say something went wrong with vaccinations, you would have a control group that would have to repopulate. Sounds terrible saying that. Yeah. And it's very extreme talking. But in scientific studies, there's always control groups. And I've been curious as to why World Health Authority never recommended that, and why our governments didn't go, right, we are naturally selected control group.
Well, that sounds like one of them scary movies you were talking about earlier. No, but like I do have an argument with all of that sort of stuff. I don't believe the no jab, no job thing's 100% right either. I think to tell people you need to have something in your body to continue doing what you've been doing for however many years is a little bit wrong. And I get people are going to jump on and probably say, you know, oh, no, they need to be vaccinated. Blah, blah, blah. I'm speaking as somebody that has worked in the high-risk environments and stuff like that with no protection and stuff like that. And, you know, I'm not anti-vax, I'm pro-choice, so
yeah,
kick it up, yeah. No, more or less it's one of those things of, you know, I've seen people work with it, I've seen people work without it, and currently in one of the places that I used to run, you know, I've got guys getting sick and I'm still in contact with a lot of these people who are sitting there ringing me for advice going, Nick, what do we do? Because, you know, nowadays that whole cowboy mentality of, oh, gee, that we've got a really big problem and we haven't got an SOP for it is gone. Like the whole work it out yourself type mentality is out. That left with me and a few other people who have left since. And, you know, so I just think more or less in the case of vaccination, I don't think no jab, no job works. They did it to us first. And I think, you know, if you're willing to take the risk and go for it, that should be your choice. I think everybody should have a choice. How many people do you work with that don't have a Hep A, B or C vaccine?
Mm.
How many people do you know that don't have measles, mumps and rubella?
Yeah.
And would you know? No. Do you care? Not really. Does it affect your day to day? No. If they get it, are they going to be more screwed up? Probably. Who knows? It depends what they get, what their body's like, if they're asymptomatic. Oh, but I don't want them to get it, you know, because I might get it. Well, if you feel like you're that scared of it, go get yourself vaccinated.
Mm.
I think it should be mandating advice is a wonderful thing as well. I think when you walk into a doctor and they tell you to stop drinking, stop smoking, maybe stop doing crack 7 days a week, yeah, maybe just do it on the weekends. it's one of those things of, you know, you should pretty much, when you walk into a doctor, they give you advice, they say, yep, you probably should take vitamin D, vitamin C, and you should go about your life. 9 times out of 10, do you listen to your doctor?
Yeah.
You know, you take the advice as you will.
Yeah, definitely.
That's why it's called advice, and I think it's a bit silly that we mandate advice. And,
yeah.
And, you know, what works for you may not work for me.
No, definitely. I agree with you there. I think I'm pro-choice as well. Unfortunately, I work in an industry now which requires me to be vaccinated. I was sitting on the fence for a very long time, and that's because of my own health issues. But I chose my business over that choice, and that's because I want to keep running my business. And without being vaccinated, I would not be allowed to run my business anymore.
And what a horrible thing to have to think about.
Yep.
Yeah, something that's obviously your baby, your creation, and you get told you can't have it anymore because you need a certain little sticky thing in your arm.
Yeah. And the fines are huge if we don't get it.
What is the fines?
They're between $20,000 and $100,000. And I'm not in that financial position.
No, I'd like to be the person who was.
Yeah. Yeah. That's and insane. I'm not in a position to fight it either. And that's the thing. My mindset is, okay, I had to get it done, suck it up and get it. I did always say, but when our borders were going to open, I wanted time. I wanted to see studies. I wanted a longitudinal study of this stuff. I feel grateful that in WA we did get about 12 to 18 months before we had to get it. So I felt like, you know, I've read enough stuff, you know, from scientists that I deem reputable.
Yeah.
Not back of cornflake boxes.
And not under the sole of your shoe, which is now covered in a wrapping paper from some restaurant in Fremantle where they breed conspiracy theory with your chips.
Yep. So I feel like I've read enough, and I feel grateful that we did have that time, that grace. So I always said, you know, when our borders are going to open, yep, I was going to get it. I think I find it interesting that people think that by vaccinating, they're not going to get COVID. That's a misconception. We still will get sick, all of us. And that's what I'm waiting for. Hopefully we get it milder, and hopefully we don't get a severe case of it. But I think it's inevitable.
So. Yeah. And I'm sort of waiting to see what happens as well. Like, I know there's a couple of places up where I've been at the moment throughout the Northwest. They're like, oh, we don't want to be the first ones to get it come February 5th. You know, that's if we open by then. I'm not sure what's going to happen with that. I haven't got a crystal ball.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of people up there in very, very high up risk management positions that I speak to quite regularly, and they're absolutely terrified.
Yeah.
These remote locations, and they want to go, oh, we don't want to be the first ones to do it. So, you know, I've pretty much thrown my two cents in with them as well, and shown them all the quarantine stuff, how we lock people up, how we shut down a site, and how we actually go about mitigating that risk, and how we go about, you know, trying to preserve a workforce as well.
Yeah.
But also that it doesn't work.
Mm.
It used to.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work, because we've pretty much come to the realization that, you know, okay, the government mandate is that we have to basically shut everything down, get a whole new crew up, and then continue whatever our process is. Right now, though, my belief is for you know, these particular locations, is you would be better off if you had someone come in that was positive and it spread through your camp. Just keep going about it normally.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, because if you're in a remote, isolated location anyway, just keep everybody up. Nobody new, nobody out. Just
yeah.
Keep everyone there until everyone tests clear, and just say, look, we're going about it normally.
Yeah.
I mean, for how many years did you have someone come in that had gastro and that went through an island, or that went through a small town?
Yeah.
Comes through and it leaves.
Yeah. So I guess it is a recovery point, isn't there? So yeah. And I guess that's a way of isolating it, isn't it?
Yeah.
By keeping people, okay, we've got a case, but we're going to keep everyone here because it's safer for our whole community that way, isn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, we've, you know, seen this done internationally as well, like not just here in WA, but I mean, there have been operations and bits and pieces that I've been a part of that have gone international, and that's exactly what we've ordered. That's exactly what we've done, and it seemed to work.
Mm.
And if someone did need medical attention, I'm not saying keep them there. I'm like, if someone needs to go to a doctor because they can't breathe or something's wrong with them, yeah, send them off, get them the treatment they need. If you can't do it there, send them off, get them a flight, send them off.
Yeah. I think with COVID, I mean, there are cases where it's very dangerous for people as well, but in majority of cases, it's mild.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it might be sickness for, I think it's 7 days is on the mild case. But then there's people that have it for longer periods of duration, and the gamble is we just don't know how it's going to affect us as individuals, and that's where that question mark comes in. And our hospital system here in WA isn't really still ready for what's about to happen.
If anything, I think the hospital system here is worse. Did you see the statistic where they came up and they said 2,000 nurses between April last year and I think now have quit?
No.
Because they won't get the jab.
Yeah.
Now, if you look at that and you go, when was the last time you went to an emergency ward?
Within the last couple of months for my kids.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, you might see a nurse there. She might deal with 3 to 5 people on a busy night.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a look at all the wards. You might have one nurse managing one room. One room may contain 4 people.
Yeah.
So between 3 to 5 people, you've got one nurse potentially looking after 5 people, we can say. Now, if you look at 2,000 people, that's 10,000 patients that could be looked after.
A lot, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And isn't that a scary thought?
Very much so. Yeah.
And only because they wouldn't get vaccinated, but they still took an oath to go and, you know, they still want to go and do their job. They just don't want something in their body without having their say. And I think that's fair enough. And if someone wants to help, I mean, why should we look a gift horse in the mouth?
No. And if they're trained and they've medically, they've got it. Yeah. Yeah. That's really sad to lose them.
Yeah. And I think all those thousands of years of experience.
Mm.
And they're sitting there looking at pulling out new nurses from TAFE. It's like, gee, how long is it going to take them to stick the needle in properly?
Yeah. I don't want to be the test subject.
Yeah, no, I'm more scared of the catheter, to be quite honest.
Yeah, pass.
No. but, yeah, no, it's an interesting world that we're sort of looking at now, I think, and I just wonder where it goes after all of this.
Where do you think it will go? Because you've worked in it, like you said, for 18 months. What points of improvement do you think it needs to happen? I guess you've seen good and bad things come out of this.
I think we need a whole restructure, to be honest. You know, if we've got guys getting sick that used to be part of my team as well, and, you know, these were good, solid workers across different hotels and different areas, and, you know, these are guys that know what they're doing. They've been a part of the operation for a year now. And, you know, when I got them, they knew nothing. And when we trained them, they were the best at what they did. Some of these guys, and you couldn't get a replacement for. These guys are 100% balls to the wall they're in. And for them to get sick is quite strange. And, you know, it makes me wonder what actually happened as well. But I think the whole system needs a restructure at the moment. Right now, I think you're better off just letting it all out, let it go. And, you know, try to work out a mitigation plan when that happens. And, you know, with the Emergency Management Act in place at the moment as well, for us to be able to mandate things like mandatory vaccination, so on and so forth, I think we need to review that because they teach us in risk consultation and all that sort of stuff. An emergency is something you don't have the capacity to detect, deter, delay, respond and recover from. We know how to do all of that. We know how to detect it. We know how to deter it. Stop people from traveling. We know how to delay it, know how to respond to it, and we know how to recover from it. We've done it with how many lockdowns in WA?
Yeah.
And I just think, okay, it's no longer an emergency. If we have all of those five faculties, I think we don't need to keep doing this, especially for the mental health aspect, because I think in 10 years' time, you're going to have a heap of people wanting a lot of compensation. Mm. And just for all the things that they've had to do and had to have done to them as well.
Yeah, what they've had to endure is pretty full on. Okay, if you had to restructure everything and you're saying, you know, maybe just let it all go, but is that meaning let COVID come in or?
Well, if we're all vaccinated and supposedly it works, wouldn't you go and take the risk on our wonderful vaccination?
Like I said, but I don't believe it's a cure, so.
Yeah, no, neither do I.
Yeah.
It's one of those things, like one day we're going to have to, you know, do something about it and look, it probably will never go away.
Mm. I don't believe it will. I think we've got another 3 years of hard times and then it will be like a flu. Our bodies will get used to it, but we've probably got 3 years of crap to go through.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I think it's very hard for humans as well, being such a social creature.
Mm. You know, oh, my God, yes. Yeah, for me, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And that doesn't make it easier. And saying that you're going to have to do 3 more years, it's like, oh, God, how many boosters would that be? One every 6 months? So you'll have, like, booster number 9.
Mm.
Well, if it's not going to stop you from getting it, I get it might mitigate your risk of getting it, but also you've got herd immunity, which, you know, it's like people are like giant stem cells. You know, you put a man with low testosterone next to a man with high testosterone, the man with low testosterone will eventually balance out.
Serious. Generally. That's like us girls with periods. That all goes in sync, right?
Yeah.
It's weird how our bodies work.
It's a similar thing. If you've got a heap of people that have had the stuff before and they're pretty immune to it, well, put them all in a room together, see what happens.
I think as well, if we raise people's mental health and people are happier, we have got less chance of stress and we've got less chance of sickness.
Yeah.
And when you've got a stressed and fearful environment, and that's across the world right now, I believe that most people are living in a fearful state, we've got a higher chance of sickness and illness.
Oh, yeah. No, 100%. And speaking of mental health and stress, the amount of guys that I used to work with that now no longer do that job, guys who ran these hotels, and they're probably going to kick my ass for saying this, but the amount of guys that turn around and they go home and they cry themselves to sleep at night because of how bad they feel about what they've done to people, locking up, you know, women and children. I mean, you know, that's a hard thing to ask someone to do.
Mm.
Like people that have done nothing wrong, they just want to come home.
Yeah.
And, you know, you one of my mates, his wife called me up the other day and she said, I think he needs mental help. And I said, well, what's wrong with him? And he cries himself to sleep over what he did.
Nick, what do you think? Okay, because that I think is opening up something else as well, which maybe policy for you guys in this quarantine stuff don't know enough about. But obviously that's post-traumatic stress. And
yeah.
And what things need to happen to help you guys, because you are doing a job, I get that. But if that's affecting your mental health, what is the long-term effect of that and what's going to help you in the short term?
Well, who knows? I mean, I thought Jack Daniels was a wonderful thing for the short term. no, but look, I'm the same. I 100% get where he's coming from. I can't look at a trans Perth bus the same.
Wow.
Yep. So when you're seeing hundreds of them lined up, you know, down Hay Street, down Adelaide Terrace, you know, you look at those things a little bit differently. I see one person, even now when I pulled up here, saw a bus go past, I saw one dude with a mask.
It triggers something in you.
Yeah, yeah. It's not a nice feeling, and that's just the guys who worked it. And these are guys who work day in, day out, you know, between 4 to 7 days a week.
Yeah.
You know, and we, you know, we put through, I think I put through about 500,000 people all up last count.
Wow.
You know, and then you've got, you know, I've got another guy who's, he's 24 years old. He's turned around and he's done quite a lot for himself. He's a nice guy, very religious, very, very smart and cluey. And for him to turn around and say that he feels like a modern day Nazi because his job was to scream at women and children to get in line and move them all in an orderly fashion, which was our job.
Mm.
You know, to turn around and use the term modern day Nazi, not one of these racist douchebags that has a bald head and walks around Midland. You know, being one of those people that has to wear a suit and tie, command the ADF, you know, because we did have defence there and, you know, commanding way pole where to stand and, you know, WA police being involved as well with, you know, lights on. It's a very scary thing to look at. And I could only imagine what a young child thinks of all of that, the amount of scared kids we saw get off.
Yeah, because it's a very big fear of unknown, isn't it?
Yeah, and you're going somewhere, you're being cordoned off like a sheep.
Yeah, you confronting
as well. And you're just being moved into a set of elevators. You go up, you go to your room, and you go nowhere else for 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, that's full on.
Yeah.
What is it like when people leave quarantine?
Leaving's always a good day. You know, you actually get to see the kids smile and they're going home. You know, if they're in with mum and dad's waiting at home, you know, that's always nice to see.
Yeah.
That's always a really, really nice thing to see. And then you've got, you know, partners meeting up again. You've got, you know, girls seeing the boyfriend, boys seeing the girlfriend, girlfriend seeing the girlfriend, whatever. And, you know, that's always nice to see people reconnect and reunite and, you know, the odd ocker Australian type that's just running straight to a bar, you know, to go get his first tap beer in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
That's always hilarious. And, you know, there are some things. People come back home and some people want to hide from their family and stuff. We had one lady, she didn't speak any English. She spoke Farsi. So we had to hide her and move her to a refuge and stuff like that. So sometimes there's not always good things waiting for people when they get home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess one of the nice things for you is that it's well-rounded circle in some ways. I'm trying to see a positive in this. You get a bit of a closure when you get to see them exit and you get to see that relief as well.
Yeah.
Where, you know, in an emergency situation, you don't always get to find out what happens to the person. Mm. So I guess, and you're obviously not going to find out once they leave, but to see that relief afterwards and know that, okay, they're exiting and, yeah. Do they get to see you more on a human level once they're leaving?
No.
okay. You have to hold.
Sadly, no. Like, and that's the sad thing about what I do for a living as well. You have to put on a certain front to be able to do it long term. And I mean, I've done my job for a great number of years now, and to be where I was and doing what I do and doing what I do best, you know, you have to have a front. And sadly, you don't always get to, you know, go up and run up and hug somebody and you'd really, really want to. And,
yeah,
you know, and there are times I do appeal to a softer side of myself and, you know, I might engage in, you know, a bit of human contact once or twice in a year.
yeah.
But no, it is a lovely thing to be able to do. And there are some people there that have absolutely had an absolute bugger of a time and it's been tough for them and they'll ring you. And I always used to say to, you know, quite a few of these guests that, you know, if you need something and you don't want to talk to the nurses, just call up, speak to me.
Yeah, great.
You know, and you sit there and you have a conversation. It might be about the footy. It might be about the weather. It might be the nice dress they saw in a shop window in New York. They saw once. It doesn't matter. We had you know, some international business lady. She was in her 70s and her husband had passed away while she was in quarantine. She was not really cut up about that. She just wanted someone to talk to. She was bored.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd sit there and I'd talk to her every day for that 2 weeks until she got out, and then I ended up going out and having a coffee with her.
Oh, lovely. Yeah. See, so that is a human side of it.
That's one nice thing we got to do. And, you know, that was awesome, just to be able to sit there and get to know somebody that you've been, you know, locking up for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, but there is some nice things as well. And, you know, even the teams as well, like the guys that got on well with their teams, you know, being able to sit there and – because I always said you spend more time at work than you do at home with your own family.
Yeah, so, true.
You know, by that extension, your team is your family. You look after your family. And, you know, in – right now we're trying to do, you know, we're doing a really crappy thing, but, you know, we're sitting here in a world full of people struggling to do their best where it's way too easy to be at your worst.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're just here to try to help them along with it, because when we all started, it was all very cold, very callous, very,
yeah,
you know, just do the job, get it done, go home, get paid. And then, you know, you sort of got to add a human side to it to, you know, make it worth it. You know,
yeah.
You got to get a bit philosophical from time to time.
Definitely. Nick, we're just about to come to the end of the show. Is there anything else you want to talk about in terms of quarantine?
No, I think we'll leave it there for now.
Okay. Nick, thank you so much for having this conversation and being so open and, trusting with coming onto the show to have a chat about this.
By all means, it was a great time.
Yeah, thank you. And thanks for everyone listening. You have been listening to Yvonne Fletcher and Nick Kinsella, and you're on Bounce Back. Thanks.
Bye.